The First International. The 1848 defeat suffered by the workers brought a period of political stagnation. However, vigorous economic development brought a big flux into the working class, and as a result, more powerful organisations began to develop, though on a somewhat different basis to that of 1848. By 1859, capitalism had extended from Britain and France to the more backward countries, breaking through pre-capitalist production, bringing ruin to the peasantry and urban petty bourgeois, and so creating the propertyless working class essential for capitalist industry. Britain forged far ahead of other countries in industrial development, and by 1859 her town dwellers were more than half the total population. Coal production increased from 10 million tons in 1800 to 61 million by 1855. Production of iron increased from 1,390,000 tons in 1840 to 3,218,000 tons in 1855. The number of spindles employed in textile production, 2 million in 1832, grew to 28 million by 1858. Railway mileage in the 10 years from 1854 increased from over 8,000 to over 12,000 square miles. By 1850, says D. Thompson, in England in the 19th century, Britain was industrialised, mechanised and urbanised, and was known as the workshop of the world. Her exports to £71 million in 1850 increased to £200 million by 1870, while imports in the same period grew from £100 million to £300 million. The gap between imports and exports was bridged by invisible exports, shipping, banking and insurance services. Changes in capitalist organisation were also necessary to meet the growing expansion of the productive forces. Firms controlled by families gave way to limited liability companies run by salaried managers, and by 1864 this had developed further into joint stock companies. By 1880, Trevelyan notes in his English Social History that 75% of corn consumed by Britain came from overseas, and gives as a reason for this American mass methods of production by a simpler and cheaper process which undercut the elaborate and expensive methods of farming built up on the English estates. He adds, however, an even more important consequence has been the general divorce of Englishmen from life in contact with nature, which in all previous ages had helped form the mind and imagination of the island race. End of quote. In France, coal production, 4,904,000 tons in 1852, increased to over 10 million tons by 1862. Iron output in the same period increased from 522,000 tons to well over a million tons. Railway mileage in 1848, 1,832 kilometres, grew to 9,439 kilometres by 1862. As already noted, small-scale industry predominated in France. German capitalism made rapid progress after 1848, having settled problems of national unification, as in Italy, their productive resources greatly increased. Capitalist development was not only confined to Europe, it spread to North America, and at the same period we are studying, was becoming a world system. Having examined industrial progress in the countries of Europe, we must now examine the labour movement respectively, as it is the methods and progress of production which enables us to understand the differences and conflict in thought of the labour movement. The labour movement in England. Suffering from the defeats of the Chartists, the labour movement in England made little headway through the 1850s. Other conditions against its revival were A. the big stream of emigration to the US and Australia, something like 2 million people in 2 years, in which some of the most energetic elements of the labour movement were lost. B. comparatively higher wages and infrequency of unemployment. C. organisation on narrow craft lines causing disunity. Fourthly, 1848 defeats brought fear of political action. Besides, industrial development led to industrial organisation and thought. Trade unions, cooperatives, was the answer to the huge industrial development. and politically, labour organisations were prepared to follow the radical bourgeoisie, in this case the Liberals. By 1851, the cooperative movement had 130 stores. It developed wholesale trading as well as retail and production, as well as distribution. In 1864, the Cooperative Wholesale Society was formed in Manchester. Its profits by 1866 exceeded £20,000, and its membership by 1870 was 250,000, which grew to 805,000 by 1889. An economic crisis in 1859 brought a wave of strikes in resistance to attempt by employers to place the burdens of the crisis onto the workers. The most important of these strikes was that of the building workers of 1859 and 1861. Resulting from these struggles, attempts were made to eliminate craft narrowness in organisation and to organise on a larger scale. The first London Trades Council was formed in 1861, and the first Trade Union Congress was held at Manchester in 1868. The labour movement in France. Savage reprisals on the workers after the struggle of 1848 dealt a heavy blow to militancy in the ranks of labour. The theories of Proudhon gained considerable influence. We've already explained this ideology, but we'll reproduce the salient points. Proudhon opposed capitalism, but not as regards its method of product, but that of exchange. Hence its main drive was in organising mutual credit societies, cooperatives, etc. Proudhon opposed socialism. Social ownership is crude tyranny, and a communist society was a society of slaves, he said. Proudhonists opposed political struggle and strike action and urged passivity towards the state. A keen advocate of private property, Proudhon stated his social ideal to be a society of small producers, acting as independent producers of commodities, wholly free from the social cancer of capitalism. A society without masters was his phrase. Proudhon's ideas fitted the productive methods of France, small-scale producers. It became the dominant factor in the French labour movement. Blanquist was small in numbers, but still a force to be reckoned with. The limitations of their followers was no doubt due to the fact that they paid no heed to social or economic questions. They remained a conspiratorial group, awaiting a favourable moment to bring about a coup d'etat to transform society. The labour movement in Germany. The rapid growth of capitalism in Germany by the 1860s transformed it into a highly developed industrial country and brought into existence a labour movement. In 1862, a central committee was set up at Leipzig to convene a national labour conference. A radical politician, LaSalle, undertook the task of drawing up a programme in which he advocated a complete break with the liberal bourgeoisie and the formation of an independent workers' organisation. The programme was accepted, and in 1863 at Leipzig, the Union of German Workers was formed, with LaSalle as president. LaSalle knew the Marxist position and accepted a great deal of it, but he differed from Marx on the class struggle and relied on negotiations with sections of the bourgeoisie to gain concessions for the workers. He attached considerable importance to the ballot box, which he considered the only means of opposing class contradictions. A second organisation of the German workers was the Social Democratic Labour Party, founded at Einsach in 1869. Its leaders were W. Liebknecht, 1826 to 1900, and August Bebel, 1840 to 1914. This organisation stood closer to Marxism and maintained a great interest in the International. The formation of the First International. A revival of labour activities took place in England and France in the 1860s. The American Civil War of 1861-5 had meant a cotton famine for Europe. The textile industry was severely hit and unemployment became prevalent. The London Trades Council organised assistance for the unemployed, and a similar organisation was set up in France. These two committees communicated with each other to produce joint action. This became the first step in international cooperation. A second event in the same direction was the Polish insurrection against Russia in 1863. The workers in most European countries agitated in favour of Poland and in England and in France. Meetings and demonstrations demanded aid to Poland. In the same year, an international gathering to declare sympathy with Poles met in London. At this meeting, the English trade unionists suggested an ongoing discussion on the necessity for maintaining constant contact between themselves and the continent to combat the employers' attempt to lower wages by importing cheap labour from France, Belgium and Germany. The English section drew up a statement which they sent to the French workers, in which is contained the following passage, and I quote, "The fraternity of the people is of the utmost importance to the workers, for whenever we try to improve our position by shortening the working day or raising wages, the capitalists threaten to bring in French, Belgian and German workers who will do our work to lower wages. Unfortunately, this threat is often put into execution." End of quote. A French delegation came to London in September 1864 with a French reply which followed the lines of Proudhon but urged on workers of all countries to unite, for capital is being concentrated in the hands of powerful financial groups, they wrote. If we do not fight against this, it will be met with no opposition and we shall be exposed to despotic rule. End of quote. On the 28th of September, a meeting with the French delegation took place in London, and the statement of the English trade unionists and the French replies were accepted as the basis for the formation of the International Working Men's Association. A committee selected to draw up the program and statutes consisted of English and French workers, German and Italian emigrants living in London. Karl Marx was elected on the committee, which consisted of trade unionists, Owenite, Chartists, Proudhonists, Blanquitists, Polish and Italian national revolutionaries. Karl Marx was requested to draw up the program and the statutes, a most difficult task considering the conflicting thought, which had to be satisfied, but one which he accomplished with great brilliance. His inaugural address and the statutes were accepted by the committee and became the foundation for the First International. A complete report of these statements can be read in Stekelhoff's History of the First International. Here we give only the basic points, which are sufficient for the student to see that while his writing is different to that of 1848, having regard to the changing situation from that period, nevertheless the basic principles of the Communist Manifesto are unchanged. The Programme and Statutes of the First International. The address started, 1. Despite tremendous growth of industry and trade, distress amongst workers has not diminished. 2. Two victories were gained by the working class in England, A. the 10-hour bill, and B. the development of cooperatives. The 10-hour Act was not merely a great practical victory, it was also a triumph of a principle. For the first time in the full light of day, the political economy of the bourgeoisie submitted to the political economy of the working class. On the cooperatives, the address said, quote, "For the first time was demonstrated in deeds instead of arguments the possibility of large-scale undertakings organized and managed without the bourgeoisie." End of quote. But this could not stay the development of capitalism or emancipate the working class. 3. Emancipation of the proletariat requires seizure of political power. The statutes declared, "The emancipation of the working class must be conquered by the workers themselves." That is, that the economic subjugation of the man of labour to the monopolizer of the means of labour, that is, the sources of life, lies at the bottom of servitude in all its forms, of all social misery, mental degradation and political dependence. End of quote. And further, that the emancipation of labour is neither a local nor a national, but a social problem, embracing all countries in which modern society exists, and depending for its solution on the concurrence, practical and theoretical, of the most advanced countries. Each country formed its section of the International, managed by a national federated council. International congresses were convened periodically to discuss important questions, and elect the General Council, whose task was to provide the ideological leadership. The first Congress was held at Geneva in September 1866. In a discussion on the ratification of the statutes, the Proudhonists urged against strikes and wanted them replaced by mutual aid societies. This was rejected. A thesis on trade unions written by Marx was adopted. It argued that trade unions were not only organisations for waging the economic struggle, but for the abolition of wage labour altogether. Other points adopted were the demand for the restoration of the independence of Poland, the demand for an 8-hour day, special protection for female and juvenile labour. The first Congress caused a considerable amount of interest and press publicity. The Trade Union Congress at Sheffield in 1866 adopted a resolution of, quote, unqualified appreciation of the efforts of the International to unite all workers of all countries by the common bond of fraternity. Sections were also organised in France, Switzerland, Italy, Germany, Belgium and England. The second Congress was held at Lausanne in 1867 and the third at Brussels, 1868. These congresses witnessed the struggle between the Proudhonist and the Marxist ideas. At the second Congress, a Proudhonist resolution on credit and people's banks was adopted, and an effort made to draw the trade unions into setting up national credit organisations. The necessity of a workers winning political power was considered one of the most important documents to be carried. The International's assistance to strikes in France at the time of the Second Congress induced Napoleon III to declare the French section illegal, but this had the effect of increasing the influence of the International and bringing about a decline of Proudhon's influence. When at the Third Congress a call for strike action was decided upon in the event of war, which appeared to be inevitable between France and Prussia, the Proudhonists were also induced to agree. The Third Congress also adopted a resolution on property which stated, quote, the economic development of modern society makes the transformation of the land into social property a social necessity. The state should lease the land to agricultural communities on the same conditions as mines and railways. Another document endorsed that, quote, means of communication and transport must become the collective property of society. This Congress also carried a resolution of greetings to Marx, who had just published his first volume of Capital, in the following words. Karl Marx has rendered an invaluable science in becoming the first economist to subject Capital to a scientific analysis. The Brussels Congress marked the decline in Proudhonist thought, but a far greater opposing force was developed in the person of Bakunin, 1814 to 1876. A Russian anarchist, Michael Bakunin aimed at the destruction of the state, which would end capitalism automatically. Instead of interesting oneself in the day-to-day struggles, preparation should be made for the insurrection. He advocated collective ownership of lands, mines, and industrial undertakings. Instead of class struggle, Bakunin advocated political, economic, and social equality of all classes. He considered Marx exaggerated the importance of the working class and considered the driving force for the revolution to be those sections of the population whose sufferings were particularly great and whom modern society had driven to despair. Bakunin's influence was strong in Italy, Switzerland and Spain. He founded the International Alliance of Socialist Democracy and endeavoured to join the International, whereupon the alliance declared itself dissolved and its members joined the International as individuals. The Fourth Congress at Basel in 1869 had the addition of delegates from North America and Spain. The first clash with Bakunin came on his resolution on the abolition of the right of inheritance. In the argument, Bakunin stressed that inheritance, quote, made political and economic justice impossible and prevented the establishment of social equality. The General Council in opposition stated that inheritance was not the cause, but the result of the existing economic order. Bakunin carried the fight into the sections and caused a split in Switzerland. The Franco-German War. In July 1870, war broke out between France and Prussia, preventing the Congress of the International, which was due to meet in Germany, from being held. The French and German sections protested vigorously against the war, and the General Council issued an appeal to all countries, placing responsibility for the war on the ruling classes, Bonapartist France and Junker Prussia. Another appeal after the collapse of the French armies, issued in September 1870, protested against the annexations of the German bourgeoisie of Alsace and Lorraine. The German members of the International fought courageously. Bebel and Liebenick were accused of high treason and sentenced to 2 years' imprisonment. Sections in Belgium, Switzerland and Austria held meetings of protest against German annexations. On March 18, 1871, Paris set up a commune. This, and the part played by the International, will be the subject of our next paper. We will now pass to the events after the Commune and the end of the International. The rapid advance of capitalism in England drew the workers away from political activity. Some unions broke with the International because of its defence of the Paris Commune. Interest in the International declined. Tremendous super profits enabled the bourgeoisie to split the workers with higher wages for sections of the class. A bitter struggle waged between Marx and Bakunin over the significance of the Commune. For Marx, the Commune represented a government of the working class, the political form at last discovered in which the economic emancipation of the working class can be consummated. For Bakunin, the Commune upheld his ideas of the denial of the state. For him, the great mistake of the Commune was its attempt to establish a revolutionary dictatorship in Paris. A Congress at the International in London, September 1871, adopted a resolution against Bakunin stating, quote, "The organisation of the proletariat in a political party is essential to secure the triumph of the social revolution and its main object, the abolition of classes." Bakunin set up an independent organisation in Switzerland called the Jura Federation. In its appeal to the other sections of the International, in which it accused the General Council of pack meetings, it won over majority sections in Italy, Spain and Belgium. In September 1872, the Fifth Congress of the International, held at The Hague, expelled Bakunin and reiterated the need for an independent party for the workers. Marx and Engels both suggested that the seat of the International be transferred to New York. They were prompted with this move, knowing that the time had come when the International had outlived its usefulness and needed to be sent far away before falling under the influence of Bakunin and the English trade unionists. This move was adopted by only two votes. The French Blanquartists withdrew, demonstrably declaring, "The International is taking refuge from the revolution across the Atlantic." End of quote. The Sixth Congress held at Geneva was a failure, and the last to be held. In July 1876, a conference at Philadelphia dissolved the International. In 1874, 10 years after its foundation, Engels wrote to Sorge, quote, "From one point of view, from the point of view of the future, the International has for 10 years dominated European history and may look back upon its work with pride. But it is in its old form, it has outlived itself. I think that the next International, after Marx's works have had some time to exert their influence, will be directly communist and will spread our principles."